Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
The topic of sustainability, climate change, how to make our world a better place is top of mind for so many people these days. We cover it here on the show almost every week in one way, shape, or form. I'm excited to talk about the recent launch of the new Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory at Arizona State University. It is ranked number one for innovation in the U.S. over the past 6 years in a row. That's ahead of Stanford and MIT, by the way, folks. And what is the Global Futures Laboratory? How did it come about? Joining me now is Julie Wrigley, the president and CEO of Wrigley Investments and the president of the Julie A. Wrigley Foundation. Julie is passionate about philanthropy, but also working now on sustainability, conservation science, and training the next generation of leaders. Peter Schlosser is also joining us on the line from the U.S. He's the vice president and vice provost of the Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Lab at ASU. Julie, great to have you with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. You are in my favorite city in the entire world.
Oh, that's a good way to start an interview, isn't it? And Peter Schlosser, thanks to you also joining us. I assume you're in Arizona today. Are you in Phoenix?
I'm in Phoenix, yeah. Unfortunately, cannot travel. So I am actually, in a way, in a lockdown since 6 months.
Well, we all know that story. Believe me, we are all, unfortunately, in the same boat on that. And, you know, let's get right into it. Peter, let's talk about the Global Futures Lab for folks that haven't heard about it and on this side of the Pacific Ocean. What exactly is the laboratory? What are you doing?
So the laboratory has been created on the basis of many of the sustainability-oriented and future-oriented initiatives that ASU has built since roughly 1.5 decades. And it is a comprehensive entity that addresses the issues that we are facing as we are looking ahead into the future of the planet, such as, for example, if we just look at the past 2 years, we had record temperatures in Europe. We had wildfires from the Arctic to New Zealand, to Australia. And, you know, at a high intensity, it was actually an inferno. We had glaciers disappearing. And, you know, for example, in low latitude, glaciers on top of mountains such as Kilimanjaro are no longer existent. We had wildfires in Arizona. And then to top it off, we all experience right now what a global crisis, such a pandemic, can do to our lives. What that highlights is that humankind, since about a few centuries, definitely since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, has put pressure on the Earth system and its all the life-supporting systems on the planet, and it's asking the planet to actually give us more than it has to offer. We are drawing on the reserve of the Earth system, and we don't know how large that reserve is. So one part of the Global Futures Laboratory is looking into these dynamics to figure out where are we running out of latitude and how much time do we have left. The second part is to actually find solutions to that so that we are not just left with doom and gloom, understanding where we have difficulties, but that we also can suggest options to global society from a local to global scale about what can be done to take some of that pressure off and get us onto a better trajectory into the future.
And that is so important. All of those topics are so important. We're talking with Peter Schlosser, the vice president and vice provost of the Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory at Arizona State University, and Julie Wrigley as well. And Julie, how did you get involved in putting this laboratory together? This is a huge undertaking. You're really trying to make a difference in the world of climate change and sustainability. Was that always a passion of yours?
Glenn, the issues of the environment and ultimately sustainability have been a passion for most of my life. I remember it at age 4, growing up in Southern California and watching Catalina Island disappear in front of my eyes. So much of my life, I was searching for the best way and the best place. And this was 15 years ago. I ran into Michael Crow at ASU, and I was looking who was going to think outside the box. because what we were doing wasn't satisfactory and how we were thinking. And it was going to take more than just some biologist or physicist or chemist, but we needed to think collaboratively across all walks of life about how we were going to try and challenge these issues. So after the 15 years, which started at Arizona, when I started at Arizona State, not having been a graduate, but looking for this magical combination, it was time for us to recognize that we had to take the next step. And this was now so urgent and so important that it was cause to follow on Michael and Peter, Dr. Michael Crowe's and Dr. Schlosser's concept of create a laboratory, collaborate internally and externally, come up with the solutions. And I got to go along for the ride as the Futures Laboratory was created, and it was done in record time.
Julie, I think you're being modest.
Necessary.
I was just going to say, I think you're being modest. I don't think you were along for the ride. I think you were the ride, and everybody was coming along with you. You were such a driving force in putting this together.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But this one's a really big leap, and it is so necessary. We're running out of time, as you know.
We are indeed. And Peter, if I can just come back to you, I have a few more questions for you, Julie. But Peter, if we can just come back to you, and as you look at the Global Futures Laboratory now, and you're one of the leading earth scientists, expertise in hydrosphere and how humans affect the planet, what are you actually accomplishing at the Global Futures Laboratory? What's being done? Because as you mentioned before, it can't just be all gloom and doom. There's got to be some good results coming out. What are we seeing coming out of the laboratory?
Let me just preface that by a comment on Julie. Julie is, you cannot imagine a better supporter than Julie is for the cause that we are trying to address out of academia for society as a whole. So to the question, yes, we have to take what we learn in the discovery phase and translate that into actions that have impact on the ground. And I will highlight that on one or two examples. I think the most interesting one, probably at this point in time, is the is keeping the planet cool, not letting it heat to more than, let's say, 1.5 degrees Celsius, but definitely less than 2 degrees Celsius, which is what the Paris Accord and the intergovernmental panel on climate change have determined we should strive for. This is only possible if we take some of the greenhouse gases that heat the planet up back out of the atmosphere. We have released them over the past 100, 200 years into the atmosphere in excess of what is healthy for an equilibrium temperature. So we have the technology, and we are scaling that up to really allow us to take that CO2 back out of the atmosphere. And if that would not succeed, and we are convinced that we will succeed, but without that technology, we definitely would have serious problems. I would say it would be impossible to keep the planet from heating for more than 2 degrees Celsius. So this is one concrete example where we are working with industry using our technology to accomplish a method, or to establish a method scaled up globally, that will keep us on track to meet the Paris Accord. There are other examples that are more from the social science side, more related to which choices are we making? How are we making decisions? We have the so-called decision theater, where we are putting information from many strands together and portray them in a way that shows decision makers what the impact will be based on the choices they make. So let me just take one example. If somebody, to go to a local scale now from the global, if in Phoenix you are looking at the air pollution, which is increasing, and the heat. If you take the tools of the decision theater, you might ask, how would the air quality improve if within 5 years we remove 30% of the combustion engines from the transportation system?
Right.
So here we are also looking at methods to help those who have to make critical decisions at this moment, who have no time to contemplate too much, to understand what the impact of their decisions will be and which ones are better for the planet and which ones are not so good.
We're speaking with Peter Schlosser, the Vice President and Vice Provost at the Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory at Arizona State University. He is in Phoenix today. And also Julie Wrigley, the President and CEO of the Julie Wrigley Foundation, sorry, Investments, and President of the Julie A. Wrigley Foundation. Julie, if I can just go over to you. You know, the big question is, can we get ahead of climate change? Already much has been said that we are either at the tipping point or we have passed the tipping point, depending on who you speak to. What's your viewpoint on that, since you've been so passionately involved in this topic for so many years?
Well, it's interesting. The answer, the quick answer is, we must get ahead. We don't have a choice. But one of the real great spots of progress is the business community. It's been leading the way. And there's increasing recognition that climate change is a material concern for private sector. The Business Roundtable, the Davos Declaration, and BlackRock CEO Larry Fink wrote a letter this year that have all made it very clear climate change is firmly on the business agenda. Stranded assets and increased risk due to climate change are very real concerns.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because investors now control 70% of the S&P 500 in the U.S. And there's a clear shift to a longer-term horizon away from day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month. Investors with over $100 trillion under management now are actively requesting climate data from organizations like the Climate Disclosure Project. So businesses are, a lot of them, are way ahead of perhaps some of the political divide and other parts of our world economy. I'm very excited about what Peter had discussed with you about drawing carbon out of the atmosphere. But it's critical for addressing CO2 that we must draw down. And it's a $1 trillion business opportunity for the private sector.
It's interesting that you say that, Julie, because just this week here in Singapore, we had an announcement. Some scientists are working on using membrane technology that is currently used for desalinization of water and water treatment to now be used in the carbon capture arena as well. And they're working very diligently on that here in Singapore to make that happen, capture the carbon and then recycle it into things in addition, like concrete, for example, and other products that could be useful to society. And if I can just push forward a bit, because our time, unfortunately, is a little bit limited. But Peter, as you think about Asia's role in this, we have growing economies, we have bad pollution issues in this part of the world with plastics and a lot of different issues. How can Asia get involved with the Global Futures Laboratory? Is there a partnership that can happen there?
Oh, definitely. We have already partnerships as part of our networks. Just one example is the so-called Build It partnership with Vietnam, where we are working with diverse government, industry, academic partners to build strategic leadership in these critical areas of sustainability. We also have networks that are more on the academic side, but geared towards providing input into decision-making in the real world, such as the Earth League, and Tsinghua University is part of that. So there are, I mean, we could not no matter how big we scale up at ASU, and I think we are ahead of our peers at this point, we cannot do that alone. We have to partner, and we are looking at Asia as a big, growing, upcoming power on the technology and innovation side. You just mentioned an example from Singapore about using membrane technology to capture CO2.
Right.
We are definitely open. We need them. We cannot do it alone.
Yeah. Julie, I'm going to give you the last word because you know your name is on the door. as you look at what the Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory can do in this part of the world, what is your hope for collaboration in Asia between Asia and the U.S. on these most important topics?
Well, as you know, in looking at our background, for the last 15 years, we have been working all over the world. One of the initial commitments these 15, 16 years ago was no one of us can do it alone. Mm-hmm. It will be partnerships internally and most importantly, externally. The one thing I would like to add, and I have a long list of things I could, is the work. This is not only about, as I mentioned, about science, but another critical issue that's being addressed is the advancement of gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls. And it's a fundamental issue that we have to address, and there's some very exciting things going on. And we would love to see more Asian women business owners get involved in the work that we're doing with the UN. And there are so many great young women doing things that will change the world.
Yeah.
That we are being exposed to, and it's time to get the Asian women involved.
Fantastic hope, and I know that there are people on this side of the world that are very interested in that and doing that. Let's hope that we can even strengthen those ties with what you're doing and other organizations around the world. We've been talking with Julie Wrigley, the president of the Julie A. Wrigley Foundation, and Peter Schlosser, vice president, vice provost of the Julianne Wrigley Global Futures Laboratory at Arizona State University, both joining us from the U.S. today. Thanks to both of you. Really appreciate your time today, and hoping that you can keep up the good work and that we can all make a difference in this urgent topic.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Glenn, and thank you for allowing us to be with you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.